Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity, set up chores, and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Tonight, Hurricane Fiona strengthening into a Category 3 storm after devastating Puerto Rico and the Dominican Republic. New images as the storm batters Turks and Caicos. Fiona now the first major hurricane of the Atlantic season. Nearly 80% of Puerto Rico without power on this, the fifth anniversary of deadly Hurricane Maria. Where Fiona is headed next. Also tonight, the new lawsuit filed by migrants against Florida's governor after he flew them to Martha's Vineyard, and now a criminal investigation. The special master's first hearing in the Mar-a-Lago documents case, why he told Donald Trump's team, quote, you can't have your cake and eat it too. The new move by Ukraine's separatist regions to be annexed by Russia. Our Richard Engel in Ukraine with disturbing new evidence of atrocities. It's being called the largest COVID fraud scheme ever, $250 million stolen from hungry children. Our Fleecing of America report. NBC News investigates the race to save the Amazon from an illegal gold rush. And our NBC News exclusive, Savannah Guthrie, one-on-one with tennis legend Roger Federer ahead of his last tournament. Would he consider pulling a Tom Brady and unretiring?
This is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
Good evening, everyone. Hurricane Fiona, now a major Category 3 storm and likely to get stronger as it sweeps across islands of the Caribbean. Days after Puerto Rico took a direct hit, that island's residents are facing difficult and harrowing days, from long gas lines to limited access to drinking water. More than 1.1 million power customers without electricity. 55% of the island territory has no running water. For many, it's a flashback of the days of crippling misery that followed Hurricane Maria, which struck Puerto Rico 5 years ago today, causing the deaths of 3,000 people. That recovery still incomplete. Tonight, we're tracking Hurricane Fiona's destructive march as it now bears down on the Turks and Caicos Islands with sustained winds of 115 miles an hour. Expected to become a Category 4 storm by tomorrow as the Atlantic storm season picks up speed. Gabe Gutierrez is on the ground tonight in Puerto Rico.
Tonight, Hurricane Fiona is lashing Turks and Caicos after intensifying to a Category 3 storm, leaving a trail of destruction across the Dominican Republic and Puerto Rico. Cars flipped downstream, roads washed away. It's now the first major Atlantic hurricane of the season. This morning, in the southern coastal town of Salinas, we met this family returning to their flooded home for the first time.
I don't know how to explain. It's so bad. Like, all the stuff around.
80% of Puerto Rico is still without power. 55% is without water. And nearly 100 emergency shelters are open across the island. Around the Caribbean, at least four deaths are being blamed on the storm or its aftermath. Puerto Rico's governor is asking the Biden administration for expedited federal help.
Today, the line for fuel in Puerto Rico grew longer and longer, especially in the southern parts of the island. They need it not just for their cars, but for their portable generators. Some of these drivers told us they waited here for more than 2 hours.
What am I going to do if I don't get this gas?
On this day, marking exactly 5 years since Hurricane Maria tore through the island, we toured the latest devastation from Fiona by air.
The water here just kept rising, choking off these communities for the better part of 2 days.
Thankfully, today, with the sun out for the first time, more of the floodwaters are now receding, but they devastated countless lives across Puerto Rico.
This storm was different than Maria. Many parts of Puerto Rico had seen harsher winds before, but not this much rain.
Carlos Benitez raced relief supplies to hard-hit areas after Maria. Fiona's aftermath now hitting hard.
Devastating, you know. The PTSD just come back right away when you, as soon as I flew the helicopter AA in the morning on Monday, it just, my heart breaks again, you know. It's like coming back on a movie and seeing Maria, all the destruction, all the floating, all the people waving on the top of the roof, requesting for help. It's heartbreaking.
Gabe, it is clear the need is great there. Are there enough supplies getting on the ground?
Well, Lester, FEMA says that its warehouses are well stocked. But aside from the widespread flood damage, the most urgent issue here is that more than half of this island still does not have drinkable water. The governor told me to expect the power to come back first and then the water service. Lester?
All right, Gabe, thanks for that update. Let's get the latest from meteorologist Dylan Dreyer now. This thing is still spinning up.
It is, and it's going to continue to gain strength. It's moving into some very warm waters north of Turks and Caicos right now, but slow moving, only at 8 miles per hour. As it continues to get closer to Bermuda, it's likely to strengthen to a Category 4 storm. It should stay about 100 miles west of Bermuda, though, so that should at least spare the island. But eastern Canada, it's still going to be a strong storm as it makes its way up towards the Halifax area, so devastating winds are still possible, and also torrential rain as it weakens from a Category 3 storm down to an extratropical low. We're already keeping an eye on our next area of formation possible in the next 5 days. There's an 80% chance this could develop into our next named storm as it moves into some very warm waters. And we'll have to keep a close eye on this, Lester, as it's possible it could enter the Gulf of Mexico.
Season starting to crank up. All right.
Absolutely.
Dylan, thanks very much. Also tonight, some migrants flown to Martha's Vineyard are suing Florida's governor, while the sheriff is now launching a criminal investigation. All as we've learned, there's a new record number of migrants crossing the border. Emily Ikeda has the latest.
Tonight, the battle over the border is building, with a new criminal investigation examining the flights that carried 48 migrants to Martha's Vineyard last week. The controversial move arranged by Florida's Republican Governor Ron DeSantis. A Texas sheriff, Javier Salazar, a Democrat, says the migrants were lured in with false promises of work and assistance.
Our understanding is that a Venezuelan migrant was paid a what we would call a bird dog fee to recruit approximately 50 migrants.
Some of the migrants now suing Florida officials.
None of them knew that they were going to be dropped off unceremoniously in Martha's Vineyard.
They were provided an ability to be in the most posh sanctuary jurisdiction.
DeSantis insists the migrants knew where the flights were going and signed consent forms, and that it puts the spotlight on President Biden's border policies, which Republicans blame for the record migrant surge.
If 50 was a burden on one of the richest places in our country, what about all these other communities that have been overrun with hundreds or thousands?
The Department of Homeland Security now confirming there have been more than 2 million illegal border crossings in just the last 11 months, smashing all previous records. While tonight, President Biden responding to unconfirmed rumors DeSantis may send a migrant flight to his home state.
He should come visit. We have a beautiful shoreline.
Though Governor DeSantis today would not confirm another planned flight. Lester?
Emily, thank you. Lawyers for the Justice Department and former President Trump held their first meeting today with the special master appointed to review those documents seized at Mr. Trump's Florida home. Peter Alexander is following this. Peter, what did he say today?
Lester, during today's hearing, that special master, the federal judge appointed to sift through those documents seized by the FBI from Mar-a-Lago, appeared skeptical about Mr. Trump's repeated claim that he had declassified them. The judge saying, unless Mr. Trump's lawyers can show that those 100 sensitive documents are not classified, that he will treat them like they are. He told the Trump team today, you can't have your cake and eat it. The special master today indicated his review may take just 4 weeks. That would be even quicker than federal prosecutors had been hoping for. Meanwhile, in a separate filing today, Mr. Trump's lawyers called this, quote, a document storage dispute that has spiraled out of control. Lester.
All right, Peter Alexander, thank you. A potentially dramatic escalation in Ukraine. Russian-held areas now planning to hold referendums to join Russia. This comes as our Richard Engel gets a look inside the town where hundreds of mass graves were found and what one man says Russian troops did to him. We have to warn you, the images are disturbing.
Outside Kharkiv in eastern Ukraine, investigators are still exhuming bodies. This is the awful wake Russian troops left behind after one of their main front lines collapsed. Ukrainians loaded nearly 100 bodies today into refrigerated trucks for identification and as possible evidence of war crimes. A civil defense worker says many of the victims had their hands tied. Others had broken bones and signs of torture. From what we saw, the torture was systematic. The Russians and their Ukrainian collaborators took over a local police station and used it as a prison.
See, these were the wanted posters of people they were looking for. And they had them up on the walls like this. Some of them look like they've already had a rough time.
Maxim told us Russian soldiers brought him here. He ran a lumberyard, and they suspected he was passing information to the Ukrainian military.
So this was your cell down this hallway here?
Yes, four people inside. Four men.
Maxim took me to the basement. He remembers the steps he took to get there.
So this was the torture room. This was originally a target practice area within the police station. You can see they put up some soundproofing, and there are these rubber reinforced walls with holes in them. So it was an area that was already silent, already built to absorb noise, gunshots, or in this case, screams.
Three.
He says he was seated and handcuffed and given electric shocks. He showed me a picture of the device they used to control the current.
What were they asking? What did they want to know?
They said nothing. I tried to talk to them. They said, you talk. You know what we want. Tell us. Maxim says he was rescued when Ukrainian forces drove the Russians out.
Ukraine's military advances are apparently making pro-Russian separatists out here in the east nervous. They plan to hold a vote to join Russia later this week. Critics call the vote illegitimate. Lester?
What a chilling account. Richard, thank you. In 60 seconds, the fleecing of America. Our report on what authorities call the biggest COVID fraud case yet. How $250 million the government thought was going to hungry children was allegedly stolen. Next.
The UN Refugee Agency, or UNHCR, responds to emergencies and provides long-term solutions for refugees. They provide aid in over 130 countries, including Ukraine, Syria, Afghanistan, and Sudan, where people are forced to flee from war and persecution at their greatest moment of need. UNHCR helps and protects refugees by providing food, shelter, medical care, and other life-saving essentials. The agency jumpstarts relief in three key ways. They transport core relief items stored in even the most remote areas of the world. They deploy expert emergency staff trained to help in crisis situations. And they transfer funds directly to support the emergency. Because of generous supporters and donors, UNHCR can scale up its response within 72 hours of a large-scale emergency. Your support helps provide life-saving aid for refugees whenever and wherever emergencies occur. Donate to USA for UNHCR by visiting unrefugees.org/donation.
They're calling it the biggest theft of COVID relief money ever. The Justice Department charging dozens with scamming $250 million from a program meant to feed children. Ken Delanian has tonight's Fleecing of America report.
Prosecutors called it a staggering fraud. The theft of nearly a quarter of a billion tax dollars intended to feed hungry children, instead being used to buy cars, houses, and jewelry.
The scheme that began with a simple idea in March of 2020 grew to become the largest pandemic fraud in the United States.
47 people now face charges, including conspiracy, wire fraud, money laundering, and bribery. The government alleging defendants connected to nonprofits and restaurants collected taxpayer money through federal nutrition programs.
Their goal was to make as much money for themselves as they could.
At the center of the indictments and appearing in court today, Amy Bach, founder of the nonprofit Feeding Our Future. Prosecutors say she was overseeing a massive fraud scheme. They say her organization recruited others to set up federally funded meal sites during COVID while oversight rules were relaxed. Soon, hundreds of sites in Minnesota were reporting giving out thousands of meals a day, but prosecutors say it was a fraud.
More than 125 million fake meals are at issue in this case.
Bach, whose organization the DOJ says received more than $18 million in administrative fees, pleaded not guilty today.
start by
Kevin Chambers leads the Justice Department's COVID fraud enforcement efforts.
Does it make you mad?
It infuriates me.
And says this case stands out because the money was meant for children.
Where the money went instead were to purchases of hyper luxury vehicles, sports cars, real estate in Turkey and in Kenya, which I don't have to tell you has nothing to do with getting food kids fed here in Minnesota.
So far, the federal government has clawed back $50 million. Prosecutors say their investigation is continuing, and there may be more charges to come. Lester?
Ken Delanian, thank you. Up next, the urgent race to save the Amazon, where illegal gold mining is even more profitable than the drug trade. Our climate challenge investigation. We're back now with our NBC News investigation into the environmental crisis in the Amazon from illegal gold mining, the impact being felt around the world. Cynthia McFadden, in partnership with the Pulitzer Center's Rainforest Project, takes us to Peru in our series, Climate Challenge.
Tonight, the Amazon, critical to a healthy planet, is in peril. We travel to the emergency zone in Peru.
What happens in the Amazon doesn't just stay in the Amazon.
Professor Miles Silman has studied the Amazon for all of his professional life. He says the biodiversity here in Peru affects weather patterns, crop growth, and even carbon levels, which is why gold mining here is having enormous worldwide consequences.
How bad is it?
It's pretty bad. It's much worse than we had feared.
Luis Fernandez is one of the world's leading experts on mercury. He explains that here in the Amazon, pure 24-karat gold is extracted by using barrels of mercury, which separates the gold from the sludge.
Mercury is poison, isn't it?
It is. It is. It's poisonous to humans, to wildlife. It actually persists. It doesn't break down. It lasts for centuries.
6 years ago, the two Wake Forest professors created a not-for-profit, Cynthia, dedicated to better understanding and then helping heal this place, which has gone from a vital resource in absorbing the world's carbon to one that pumps ever more carbon into the atmosphere.
The first meter of soil in the forest holds as much carbon as all the trees that are above it. And then when we think about the next meter, 2 meters, 3 meters, 4 meters, there can be a whole other forest's worth of carbon down that deep.
Are you suggesting that if we dig down there, we may be releasing all of this old carbon into the atmosphere?
Not suggesting, we really are.
It's carbon leaving the earth and entering the atmosphere that is the primary greenhouse gas contributing to climate change. The ecological effect has been devastating. More than 370,000 acres of protected forest have been turned into this by mining. Desert, dotted by pools contaminated by mercury. In the region, millions of acres have been lost. And here's the catch. Gold mining with mercury is legal in Peru, but not on protected lands. And it is this illicit mining that pumps more than $3 billion worth of unaccounted for gold out of Peru every year, much of it headed to the U.S. What's fueling this gold rush? Money. The price of gold in 2007 was about $700 an ounce. Today, it's worth more than twice that much. Little wonder various transnational cartels and paramilitary groups have gotten involved. Some now making more money trafficking illegal gold than drugs. The situation is seen as so dangerous that the U.S. military has stepped in, providing intelligence to the Peruvian government. This is just the beginning of a massive destruction.
Así es.
NBC News is the first U.S. television network Peruvian Special Forces has permitted to embed with them since the pandemic. They're in charge of this area. It's called La Pampa.
Victoria!
Viva! This is not just an environmental disaster. It's also a real question of national and international security.
Así es.
The Peruvian government declared a state of emergency here, which is still in effect, and launched Operation Mercury 3 years ago. They successfully pushed 25,000 miners out of La Pampa. Despite it all, Silman and Fernandez are hopeful. They've made strides in their reforestation work, figuring out what can be replanted, the largest such enterprise in the Americas.
That's a beauty.
This is called Caliandra. It's a legume, and it's a survivor.
This was all desert a few years ago, but with their help and a little push from Mother Nature, it's coming back.
Nature always heals itself. It just depends on how long it takes.
Well, if we don't mess it up too much.
Problem with talking to a biologist is I'm thinking nature heals itself on the scales of like asteroids killing dinosaurs and things like, yeah, sorry.
Realizing that the Amazon doesn't have that kind of time, the battle to save it continues as the destruction rages on. Cynthia McFadden, NBC News, La Pampa, Peru.
And up next, Savannah Guthrie's exclusive with tennis great Roger Federer. Is he really done with the game? Roger Federer's decision to hang up his racket ricocheted around the world. But before his final serve, he talked exclusively to our Savannah Guthrie about if he's really calling it quits. Here's Ann Thompson.
As Roger Federer prepares to retire, unlike some, the tennis champ tells Savannah Guthrie exclusively he's not looking for a do-over.
Say, you know, unretiring is a thing now.
I know.
Tom Brady, now no. Serena seems to be wavering a little. You're done.
No, I am definitely done. I know that, yeah.
41 years old, Federer will play his final professional games in the Laver Cup, a team tennis event he helped create. The capstone on a career that includes victories in every Grand Slam tournament and an astounding 237 consecutive weeks at number one.
Is it one of those things where they say sometimes there's the stages of grief? Did you feel all those feelings?
Yes, all of it. And also the ones where I don't want to deal with it. Like, I just don't want to think about it. Don't talk to me about it. I went through a lot of sadness and emotional moments where just, you know, how you start thinking about everything you're going to miss. And then you just think, oh my God, my life's going to be miserable after. And then you realize, no, actually, we're going to have more time. So we're going to do all these amazing things now. So it's going to be great, you know.
Louis, his wife Mirka, and their four children. For us, a last chance to savor a game of grace and power. Ann Thompson, NBC News.
And you can see much more of Savannah's interview with Roger Federer tomorrow morning on Today. That's nightly news for this Tuesday. Thank you for watching, everyone. I'm Lester Holt. Please take care of yourself and each other. Good night.
Hey, parents. Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.